Down to Brass Tacks, hello?
Yes, good afternoon.
Mr. Ellis?
Hi.
You read a WhatsApp there earlier with the certificate. You say that the body say that because pay money and get one?
You know that you have to get this clearance certificate 72 hours before you come to Barbados.
Yes.
And there are allegations that people have been able to pay money and get the certificate without taking the test. And therefore, in those circumstances, the recommendation is that we shouldn't rely upon those certificates.
Well, I see you shot that WhatsApp for how he know or she how she know.
Hmm.
Because that's not real funny.
But you know, people will pay money to get anything done.
I don't know.
You don't know.
I don't know.
Mm, you're very trustworthy.
Well, but I don't like that WhatsApp at all.
Why you don't like it? Because is it impossibly true?
I doubt it very much.
Okay.
You meet somebody with foot. Their job or their profession for $50? I would never do that. If you understand me.
Okay, thank you very much. Down to Brass Tacks.
Good afternoon, David. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon.
I want to speak to Ronnie. I had no intention of coming, but when I hear Ronnie, I want to speak to him. Is he still there?
I am still here, sir.
Yeah. Ronnie, yes, you would know this person, if I tell you, connected to Colin, surfing on Sir Site.
Okay.
Good. How is mommy?
She's doing well, thanks.
All right, well, you know when you close down, I don't see her. And the madam is all right?
Yes, definitely.
So you're back here now with Barbados?
Permanent? Yeah, well, for the last few years, yes. Yeah, definitely.
Oh, dear, well, I didn't even know that, calling it anything. Anyhow, I was searching one of my books. I got your number there. I want to ask you a question on this declaration of assets.
Mm-hmm.
Bill that was placed, integrity bill, huh?
Yeah.
Now, I could recall a couple of years ago when the Prime Minister was in opposition, she put forward what was her assets. I think it was $1 million. And
I think
it was two. I thought it was two.
And
I can't remember any number. Yeah.
And Oinava, he put forward his.
I thought his was $1 million.
Something like that. So yeah. I am a bit skeptical. Not that I'm concerned with what they have, because I just tell people all the time, as I tell David already, when we had a little argument over Frank Walker, I told him straight, well, so Frank Desi, too, for all the anybody else. So what I'm saying, don't care how much money you have, one of the things that we got to come to realization that we have to go along and leave it. But what I am saying, as if you promised the people that you would make this integrity bill before you go into Parliament, or whenever you enter Parliament, before you take up business, why would you wait so long before, seeing that she made her declaration earlier, and Prime Minister Oinava made his, why the others could make them too? That's all the question I have.
If I remember correctly, the ministers made their declarations, but they were sealed, and they are with the cabinet office. But the declarations were not going to be made public until the supporting framework of the law, which is being debated at the moment. And I'm trying to remember this.
That's the position. And I think that awaits the establishment of the Integrity Commission.
Exactly. So the actual declarations are supposed to have been made, and they're with the cabinet. They're sealed. They're with the cabinet office. And once the commission kicks in, then everything will take its
place. So it means, therefore, that they have already made their declaration already?
That's as far as I understand. If I remember from the public stories.
If that is the case, well, I will got to be questioning. I will got to look for my paper and see what it is that Wood trying to say. Because Wood was saying that they should declare, the promise was declared before they go to Parliament. And he said that they failed to do that. So I like to listen and read. I will got to search my paper and see what the accusation is that former Minister Wood laid pertaining to integrity. Mm-hmm. And I hope that you enjoy, and since I know that you are here, I will give you a call pretty often.
Okay. Thank you.
Down to Brass Tacks. Hello. Welcome to the program. 434-1790. That's the number for you to call. Hello, you're there?
Yes, please.
Yes, ma'am.
Good afternoon. Yes. I just good afternoon, first thing.
Hi, good afternoon.
I just called to compliment Mr. Carter,
mm-hmm.
the Honorable Prime Minister, and all of the essential workers for doing such a fantastic job. I'm very grateful.
Can you turn the radio off, please?
Wait a minute, let me close in the door. And I had heard at one time that Mr. Dr. Corey Ford, he had started from late December trying to put things into place in case this had come about on us. I'm so grateful for it. And that lady that had called earlier, she's very unreasonable. Okay? Because you can't get everything to work for you. Desire can't go there. You, Mr. Ellis, can't go there and make people do things. Okay?
Yeah.
You have to speak all the time, guide them all the time. But they're doing a very, very good job, and I thank God that probably in September I'll be going back to work.
Well, you know, this discussion about the czar and his approach, it reminds me of the concept of good cop, bad cop. You have the czar who comes with this stern language, mm-hmm. and then you have the prime minister who comes with a softer touch. you understand? And when you're dealing with people, you can find that these two approaches can work.
Yeah.
And the person who has more to lose politically with this, with the tough talk will be the prime minister. So it is advantageous to have the czar take the tough line. After all is said and done, he will go back to what he was doing before. He takes the blows, and the prime minister gets the glory for being so kind-hearted and soft and caring. All right? So that's another way of looking at it.
They all want to.
I see people making all sorts of noise about this issue of how he comes across and stuff. But as I see it, a lot depends upon the response of the public. At the end of the day, what matters is how people respond. Now, we've had this complaint before. And what did we see? When the czar came out and made his comments and that sort of thing, people started to take these things seriously. People responded to the point where we can tell you that Barbadians have been compliant.
Yeah.
They were compliant with that same approach. The good cop, bad cop. Okay? So if it worked in the past, it may work again, most likely. All right? This situation with the development of this tropical storm is serious enough that I think we should cross over to the Met Office for their latest advisory on this matter.
The Barbados Meteorological Services continues to monitor the progress of Tropical Storm Gonzalo, which is located near 9.9 degrees north and 43.6 degrees west at 11 a.m. That's about 1,770 kilometers or 1,100 miles to the east of Barbados. The system is currently moving towards the west at 14 miles an hour or 22 kilometers an hour, and a general westward motion at a faster forward speed is expected during the next few days. The maximum sustained winds have increased to near 50 miles an hour or 85 kilometers an hour. A small tropical cyclone, and as effect, the tropical star force winds extend outwards only up to 25 miles or 35 kilometers from the center. The system has become better defined within the past few hours, and this is evident by the improvement in the banding to the north and west of the system. In addition, visible satellite imagery has been showing indications of a hint of an eye developing. And if this trend continues, then the system could be on a rapid intensification trend this afternoon. Due to the small nature of this storm, the fluctuations in intensity up or down are highly likely. As a result, Gonzalo could become a Category 1 hurricane within the next 12 to 24 hours. As the system continues to track westward across the central Atlantic, a tropical storm watch may be issued for Barbados sometime on Wednesday night. The current forecast track suggests that the center should pass about 105 miles or 160 kilometers to the south of Barbados on Saturday morning. The Barbados Meteorological Services will continue to monitor the progress of the system, and their next update will be at 5 p.m. Wednesday, the 22nd of July, or sooner if conditions warrant.
That weather report came from Alex Strawn, Met Assistant with the Barbados Meteorological Office. This is down to brass tacks. This person says that they have worked in the tourism sector as a hospitality worker. The welcome stamp for long stay visitors is not a good idea, nor is it profitable to restaurants and bars. This is the reason that he's given. People that are year-long visitors only go to bars and restaurants about twice a week and also on weekends, but the short stay visitor only has a limited time, so they go to bars and restaurants almost every night. So the restaurants and the bars make more money and the staff as well. Now, one of the things you need to take into consideration in all this discussion is that listening to the debate yesterday, the Prime Minister said, will it work? She says, well, she is not sure that it will, but she's trying something, all right? She's never given a guarantee that, you know, it will do all that is expected. But at a minimum, the government has made an effort on this one to see if this can make some kind of difference in circumstances where we've lost so much in the tourism sector. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, sir. Listening to the program today,
yes,
I find that people that live in Barbados, Barbadians, people that live in Barbados, it seems not to understand that COVID-19 pandemic is a serious business. It is not because some person wants to put pressure on you or rules or whatever. It is protecting. The rules are there to protect you, the person. And it seems as though, to me, the entertainers and the minibus people have a problem with the protocols that's supposed to be implemented or invented in the island. I don't understand why they don't understand that this virus is a serious thing. It seems as though everybody wants to just do as they like and fit and do as they drink and do what they like. It don't seem to be that these people understand what's going on. You would say about that?
Ronnie?
It is serious, and I think we need to take it serious. And you mentioned, I'll just focus on the group you mentioned, the minibus drivers and bus drivers. I'll say this, and I'll take the licks for it, but I don't think we should be surprised at that particular group not willingly or not complying with the rules, given that this is the same particular group that often fails to comply with rules, basic rules for traffic or whatever other rules for order and management of that particular sector. So this is why this goes back to this point I made earlier. In some ways, COVID manifests or shows us or spots lights on particular problems in our society. Because COVID doesn't create the problems. COVID didn't create the ill discipline that we have in the minibus sector. COVID may just make it more apparent because now it's not just their ill discipline. Their ill discipline can harm the rest of the entire society. So how do we now actually try to manage a group that for years and years and years and years have continued to flout the rules and have exhibited no kind of sense of respect for society or for the rest of us? COVID now just makes it apparent because their bad behavior endangers all of us now, not just themselves.
You prefaced your remarks by saying that you may get some licks for it. But let me put another perspective on this. The minibus and ZR operators are not the only ones who are demonstrating that kind of relaxed attitude. And I think a lot of it has to do with the information and the mixed messages which have been sent to Barbadians as it relates to COVID and the lockdown period as well. There's a natural tendency on the part of people to want to be free. And we've had a lot of freedom over the years. So once you were in lockdown, people were very glad to escape. Once you got the distinct message from the authorities that we had licked COVID, then people relaxed even more. All right? So I don't think it is peculiar to ZR people or anybody like that. The same people who went to the FETs at the higher end, they went through the same experience. And what has happened is that you take this calling program here today. At the height of COVID, we had people from the czar to the minister to people from the hospital and all of that talking about these issues on a regular basis. Instead, what we have now is PSAs with a drop here and a drop there. So even that has changed the tempo, and it has given people a sense of, I suppose, a sense of complacency. And therefore, the people who are behind the strategy of communicating with the public would have to make some changes so that people who have become more relaxed will be able to say, but you know what? It's time for me to raise the ante again. I think this is what it's about. And to that extent, the concept of saying to people, you are responsible for bad behavior, and if you don't stop behaving badly, then we are going to do X or we're going to do Y. There are some elements of the community that may need that, but in general terms, we have shown compliance to such a degree that it may only be necessary now to once again raise the consciousness by being far more present and that sort of thing. That is my sense of, that's the other side of it. You know, there's never one side of a story.
Yeah, and that's true. I don't necessarily think people need to be scolded as such, because you're right. I think for the most part, I think most Barbadians understand the seriousness and respond in like. Obviously, there are elements or there are people who, in any society, will seek to break the rules or stretch or bend the rules as much as they can. And perhaps the next step for the government is, as you said, raise the level of its outreach in a more personal way beyond the PSAs and re-engage at that level so people understand.
Yeah.
We're still in that serious phase. We're out of lockdown, but that doesn't mean we're not engaging in the same kind of mindfulness and seriousness of which we did when we were in lockdown.
As long as you're bringing flights to Barbados, the risk is there, and you know, nobody can say who has it and who doesn't have it by just looking at them, you know?
Yeah.
All right. Down to brass tacks. Hello? You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, welcome.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You see why the minibuses can't be no better? You hear the lady today, right?
Which one?
The one that defending the minibus men, saying that why then we will have to get out the bus because the minivan driver don't have any mask on.
Yeah, I heard her.
You see what can be the better?
But most people don't think like that, though, in Barbados.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but because you bring a lawyer today stating that is to put on masks. Everybody up in arms. They are not supposed to wear masks. Why are you wearing the mask? Yesterday, I see, although yesterday was the first day for the minibus men with the mask, this silver sand road, I see all of them yesterday. They had on the mask the morning. And you see the evening? No one got on mask. They're driving up and down and doing what they like. Even some of the passengers getting in the van without the mask. I see all that yesterday evening. So nobody cares. The minibus men don't care. So they can do what they like. Don't care what law you put in place. They can break every law. That's how them is.
But perhaps they just need a little bit more information. The government has spent a lot of time on providing information to the public. And in the case of the minibus operators, perhaps there's a need for more of a push in their direction. First of all, to remind them of their own vulnerability and to let them be also reminded of the fact that they are exposing their loved ones to the possibility of COVID and to possible death.
But Mr. Ellis, them don't care, them don't listen to radio.
Well, that's why I'm saying...
Them listen to music.
Right, but therefore you may have to find a different approach in trying to reach them.
So yeah. What's the different approach that you can reach them?
Well,
this is 30 years or more.
You see, you're beating up on it. Today...
I am beating up.
You're beating up on the ZR people exclusively. When I'm saying to you that something else is happening in the society to show you that there are other people who have reacted in a similar way. And we see it on the streets every day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as the czar said, you don't need it on the streets. It's not mandatory on the streets, but there are other circumstances where it's mandatory.
I just see everybody too. I don't see only the czar drivers.
Mm-hmm.
I just see the men that driving the taxis, the ZM. I just see them too. I just see everybody too. I just see even people with the food stalls and all. The same thing. They don't put on a mask sometimes neither. They got on sometimes, another time they don't got on none. I just see everybody.
Right. So that means that a number of people have relaxed. And that's why I am not inclined to just go after ZR drivers or ZR conductors alone.
But I am not going after them. All I'm saying to you is we Beijing don't like changes. So if anything go wrong with this, that are other people gonna come and say that's wrong. They can talk about other people. Yes, I understand all of that. But if you're doing wrong, don't just say Mr. Lazar is wrong or next. He's right. Put on the mask. That's the law. So I don't see what everybody trying to beat up, and get on. Put on the mask. If you walk from your door to the bus stop, got on your mask. So I don't see what's the problem. We like too much. We don't like to see changes. We just don't like it. That's the problem.
I think that most people, and you know, if you analyze it, don't like change. People don't like change. That's just human behavior. And it's not necessarily about beating up on the ZRs or the minibus, but you know, I'd just like to frame it in this way, and I think I hinted to it before, but I'll make it more explicit. In some ways, COVID just exposes behaviors of persons or in sectors, because in some way it's not changing your behavior, because people who would normally break the rule will just break the rule. Those of us who would have normally complied anyway with rules just comply. So in some ways, it just shines a light on problems or issues of whether it be social discipline or other forms of behavior that do not allow us to function as a society in the best way we can. So I don't think it's beating up or highlighting one particular group as such.
Okay. Dr. Brastax, hello.
Hello, good afternoon.
Hi.
Afternoon to you and the guest.
Hi, good afternoon, ma'am.
I'm thinking, I really find it hard to understand why people are so critical of Izar. I would say that Izar, along with his team, they have done a fantastic job. And if Izar hears of things that are not right or contrary to what should be done, it is appropriate for him to come out and correct things and so on. I mean, you have parents who correct you, but you might not want to hear what they have to say. But later on in life, you realize that they were quite right. And this, I understand this gentleman, he's well equipped to handle this. Why aren't we appreciating what the gentleman is doing? I mean, like, leadership. People understand what leadership is all about. When we sleeping and snoring at night, this team is probably up wondering what to do the next day, according to how many more they hear of coming. And I mean, these persons have their cup full of flowing over. What I think might be wrong is some persons are wearing the wrong type of mask and they can't stand it on their face. I passed on there as well some masks at $5. I thought, $5 is cheap. Let me go and see if they get two of these. But when I examine the mask is cotton on the outside and pellon on the inside and cotton on the outside, whereby the mask should really have two sides of the pellon in the middle. So when you wear something, going to buy something like that, and you wear it, it's going to itch your face. So I think it might be a standard. It might be better to advise persons on the standardized type of mask or how to make a cloth mask or whatever.
Ma'am, can I ask you a question? Not on the mask, because I think you raised something very, very important at the beginning of your statement when you said you don't understand why people are critical of the Czar. Now let me rephrase and let me ask you a question. Do you think that being critical, and I'm not talking about criticizing for the sake of criticizing, but do you think that criticizing and being critical is important to making sure that we get it right? Suppose something happened and nobody says anything.
But to outwardly say, downwardly, as the old people say, that the person, you know, it's like if they think that the gentleman don't have our well-being at heart.
That wouldn't be questioning the well-being. Suppose you came on here, right, and I was the doc, and I told you, you have to do X, Y, and Z. This policy is rolled out in your community. You've lived in the area for all your life. You know that people don't respond in that way. And you came, you said to me, look, you know, that doesn't work here. I can tell you from my experience, people will not respond. You need to take this into account. How would you respond with that? Would you do that? Or would you think, okay, you know what? I don't want to be seen as critical because that's not the approach. Or do you see that as part of your role in being a responsible citizen to engage in policymaking?
But being a responsible citizen, just as I said just now, the person might find there's a reason why they don't want to wear the mask. Some people say they feel like they're choking, different things like that. Right? So, put what is happening then. Say why.
Yeah, okay. Perfect.
And get it sorted out, but there are places like China and the Eastern countries, people have to wear a mask as long as they are leaving home. And I think we have it so good here, and we don't know. We can still go outside, and our children can run around the house and things. Back in the States, you know, people in high rise, and they're getting, what the scientists said, they're getting our COVID fatigue because, like, they can't get the sun, especially the white person. As some people, they're outside on the lawn because they need it as well. This thing is really serious. Oh, I think we should really count our blessings. You know that Trevor Noah, who brings to his show, and you can find it on YouTube, he mentioned Barbados and how our prime minister is advertising that person should come here and do some business and so on. The only thing he said about it is that you have to get from where you are to Barbados. But if we weren't doing so good, you think that would be a mention? And they show Barbados, the beautiful beaches and beautiful turquoise waters. I mean, we have it really good here. Let us give praise to those who are really pushing to help us get through this.
Well, there's an angle there, Ronnie, that's interesting as well. It is the extent to which the Prime Minister has been able to raise the profile of Barbados abroad through, yep, in this crisis. It's a very significant development, huh?
Yeah. No, that's correct. And there's been, and we can give the government, I think, as I said, you know, we are fair in our criticisms, but also fair in our praise. And there's a lot of kudos for the profile raising in Barbados. I think the thing will be the follow through and to how do we monetize that now? Because that's the reality. You know, these things now have to be monetized in a way that helps us, or how do we use that to be able to help us, whether it's to create the new form of tourism that we're trying to push, or whatever new policies we're pushing, whether it's shifting trade towards more nations in Africa. However, whatever these profiles are now, then the question is, how do we then turn that into something that pays for schools, roads, and hospitals in Barbados?
And how many of these people she could attract from Hong Kong without overtly doing so? Because to do so in an overt manner means that China will be watching you.
Yeah, exactly. So there are lots of foreign policy questions in there. And there are things sometimes, as you would appreciate in foreign policy, you don't necessarily say or talk about, but there are actions that governments will take as necessary.
Yes. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Yes.
Hi, good afternoon.
Yes, Mr. Ellis?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, good afternoon to you and your guests.
Yes,
good afternoon, ma'am.
I know that Mr. Cesar, he has gone already, but I want to compliment him. He's doing a wonderful job. What I am calling about, I was reading about, you know, places would like to have this fete and the next fete, and they're not to go over 500 and so on. But this is what I'm saying, Mr. Ellis. This COVID-19 is not a joke, and I don't even think that people should be thinking about having parties and that kind of thing, because there's no way in a fete, even if you've got 25 persons at a fete, there's no way they can hold social distancing and all of that there. And this thing that we think that is just a little flu that you can take two Panadols and go away is a deadly virus, and we should be more than careful. Why can't we sit out this entire year? What's a classic about having parties and fetes and those sorts of things? Keep yourself quiet. I will bet you, Mr. Elliot, whenever I have to keep up all these parties and these fetes, watch my word. After, and people have to go for tests and drugs, you can find that the rise in this COVID-19 is going to come up. People is going to break out again. We should just keep ourselves as quiet as possible and sit it out for this year. No setting this, whatever. Home at your house and you have your little family, you want to have a little something that between yourself and your family, okay. But this going to party,
you know that these fats and stuff normally generate income for people. This is all part of the economic, restarting of the economy.
Yes, Mr. Ellis, I know that. But listen, what is the sense? You can make money now, and then you might not even live to spend the money.
What about the fact that there are those who will tell you that we don't know how long COVID is going to last?
Exactly.
And what we have to do is that we have to find a way of living with it. We have to be able to earn a living.
Right, we have to accept it, yes.
Right.
But I feel having these parties and more, you ain't going over more than 500. 500 is a lot of people. That's a crowd. And, you know, the youngster like to rub up and dance up and against one another. And that is a dangerous, dangerous thing. I wonder if some of us just watch CNN at night and see how many people per day dying with it over there. And all of that is because the people clustering up against one another too fast, too soon. And I feel it should stop. And they should adhere to rules, wear the mask, do the sanitizing and the social distancing, and we will ride it out, you would say. But, you know, some people just like to have their own way in everything. Anyhow, I am an old person. I'm trying to keep as close and as safe as I possibly can.
Well, one thing they've succeeded in doing They've given you a lot of information, and you remember a whole set of it to protect yourself.
Yes.
You know, these we miss these success stories in all of this, huh?
Mm-hmm.
That we've been able to get people in the country at a variety of levels to understand how dangerous it is.
It's a killer. It's in a joke, nothing. I mean, mm-hmm. I've got to get serious about it. Oh, my dear. It hurts my heart when I see and so on, you know, people doing foolish things, that people are supposed to be educated, doing silly mm-hmm. things. Anyhow, mm-hmm. Mr. Ennis, you stay as close and safe as you possibly can until we hear each other again. God
Thank
bless
you very much for calling, ma'am.
All right. Thank you.
It's 1:47. This person writes that the Prime Minister's remote digital work concept is a super awesome one. But she has to be very wary about the gun crisis we have in our country that can scuttle this awesome idea. She has to deal with the rabid crime issue in the country and start burying her head in the sand and pretending all is well. You want to react to that? What do you think?
Yeah, we've heard these comments before, and that obviously is not prone to one particular ministry. We know that addressing crime is a multidimensional issue. So let's unpack it a little bit. So when you think about, for example, and their connections between poverty and crime, I think, and I'm trying to remember this off the top of my head, statistics from the CDB show that about 30% of Barbadians live in what we call multidimensional poverty. So that's on all, you know, education, income inequality, etc. So what we think of when we need to address crime, it's not just simply about addressing aspects of crime like burglary or murder. That's one aspect, but we need to address the causes of crime. So we have to not only be tough on crime, we have to deal with the causes of crime. And I think that's really where we're going to see the results in the long term, and perhaps some in the short term. And not only would the short term policing matters, but this is going deeper, whether it's improving, for example, at-risk programs at school. So we know at schools, some kids will display certain early signs of antisocial behavior. Or may come from difficult homes, and we need to address it. So schools should probably have at-risk programs which are properly funded so that those kids can have particular attention, whether it is removing them from the school environment to place them in an environment where they can receive requisite counseling, whether it's providing them with services, for example, breakfast programs, a lot of schools will have that, or trying to assist their parents in ways to ensure that they complete their education. So addressing crime is not a simple one program approach of, you know, let's reduce crime, let's bring crime burglaries down, let's bring this down. But you have to look at, I think, a whole systematic picture in order to really, really deal with it. And when you start doing that, you're looking at poverty, you're looking at issues in our schools, and how do we get these kids before they end up in crime, because no one starts. So you don't grow up, I'm going to be a criminal. There are factors, and a lot of them come from the homes and the families, and that's where we need to target and spend some time and money.
Somebody living in the United States right now, a Barbadian living there, says that thousands of West Indians haven't qualified for support from the government there because they are not documented. Thousands have no savings and worked in jobs that have gone. According to the Washington Post article this week, 23 million families in the USA face eviction from housing come September. Wow. And that represents one out of every five families, mainly black. In New York City, it will hit immigrants hard. On the health side, we are seeing many more younger patients who may be fortunate to survive COVID-19, but are spending more time in hospitals and will have longer-term health challenges. Mm-hmm. It is traced back to relaxed openings. Never seen such a damaging meeting of health and economic calamities. Now, so we talked a bit about the number of Barbadians who have died in New York in particular, and some in Florida as well. But the crisis continues. The same economic discussion that we are having here, they are having there as well. And this is really where a lot of damage of a different type is being done. So the Trump administration is desperate to see if he can get this economy going again. Part of it, yes, it is his desire to be reelected because he needs a strong economy to be able to campaign with that. But there's also the real situation of livelihoods and people's situations being threatened because the economy isn't moving, and Barbados is in no different position. This is down to brass tacks. Hello? Welcome.
Let me assure your guest that he won't get any brickbats from me on his comment. For too long, we have allowed certain sectors of this country to do as they please. And despite laws on the statute books to deal with them, we've always patted them on the back and let them go free. I agree with Azar that it is time to get tough. I do not agree with the fact that you give, having gone through all the instructions and the protocols of COVID, that should be indelible on the minds of each and every one of us. I don't know that anybody needs to be reminded of the protocols, or if found in breach, should be given a warning. I feel that if found in breach, they should be given the stiffest penalty and make them an example to others around us. We have this thing in our minds about the poor black man and the poor person. That is why I have a concern about what we continue to boast about the level of literacy. Literacy is not being able to write your name and your address on a piece of paper. It is the ability to absorb information and to put it in action. And a lot of us run and hide when things happen and point and say, the poor black man. I did not get the impression from the Czar the other evening on television that he was picking on any one section. I got the impression that he's firm that anyone found in breach will face the consequences. So I have no problem whatsoever. I don't quite agree with you that because of the lack of frequent appearances on radio and television by the PM and the Czar and others. I have no problems with that because I fully understand after months of information what COVID-19 is all about and what it can do to us. I abide by the relaxation is fine. You do what you have to do following the protocol. I don't see why we have to have a long debate on all this, but this is Barbados, and everybody will find a loophole when the time comes. I have always been of the opinion that a leader must have some tinge of a dictatorship in himself or herself to rule a country. We have too many people who are willing to run to lawyers and find loopholes to do what is necessary to get out of what they should be doing from in the first place. So, tell your guests, no brickbats for me. Mr. Carter has my back all the way. And I think that it's time that we sit up and take note, this thing is no joke. Because we have few cases, I know very well there could be a spike when we open our borders. It is safe for us. It is better for us to continue doing what we are doing to to prevent the spread, the community spread, and let's deal with those who come in, who test positive, let's deal with them as they come in. So I don't see what all the hoo-ha is about. Let's bring the law in action and fine people or jail them if they break the law. That's as simple as ABC. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any comment, Dr. Ronnie
Yeba? No, I think it's as you said, there are many sides to the story, and I think sometimes it's just about trying to appreciate where everyone is coming from. You know, it's always about leadership at the end of the day. And at the end of the day, we have elected and we voted for leaders to make decisions on our behalf, of course, but in consultation with us and with input from us for how these things will affect us. I don't necessarily categorize people's complaints or criticisms as a bad thing. I think sometimes that's healthy for democracy, and perhaps sometimes we're a little bit hard on ourselves. You know, the Bajans don't listen. Bajans are, no. I know their elements. So we all know in any society, if you've lived the way, you know that some of this behavior is not peculiar to Bajans. This is not just a Bajan behavior. And we can be hard on ourselves, and rightly so. But at the same point, we don't necessarily have to see people's criticisms and feedback as negative. We should, you know, listen to it, take it, weigh it up, and see where there are things that can help improve policy can come from. Because as you've been doing this program for long enough to know, David, in every comment there is a little something. Even if there's a lot, there might be a little strand of something you can learn.
Well, I appreciate the fact that we come from different backgrounds, different exposures, we have different personalities, and therefore, at the root of it all, we claim to be living in a democracy. It has its areas where you cannot venture, but generally speaking, there's a lot that can be said, and we need to appreciate that. People will have different opinions, and that's exactly what this is about. I am not going to subscribe to the view that people should be prevented from expressing their view because I don't agree with the view. Yeah. I think it's if we did that, this program would die. Yeah. This program needs to have that diverging perspective, differences of points of view and that sort of thing. And that's where we learn from each other. Today has been another example of that. I mean, there are people who feel that the authorities may be too harsh in the way that they are dealing with people and compliance. And then there are other people, I would say that today, I thought the majority of the people who called were more supportive than those who were critical. So, I mean, sometimes you can sit down and watch social media, and social media will give you the impression that a person getting all these blows. But when you come and you balance that with what people say on a program like this, and we didn't set it up, not for that purpose. You come here, and we got to deal with it as it is. So thank you very much for joining me today on today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks, Dr. Ronnie Yearwood.
Thank you very much for having me.
Great. And thanks to Michelle Brathwaite, the technical operator and producer. I'm David Ellis. Do have a great afternoon.